Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Cheers of joy last night off Barrow, Alaska, as the two surviving California gray whales began heading for open waters behind a Soviet icebreaker. The tired, disoriented whales at one point turned the wrong way, but officials are hoping they'll keep swimming in the right direction. David Dow has been covering this drama of man and nature.
Just as rescue workers were about to celebrate the success of their long Save the Whale effort, a funny thing happened. The whales refused to cooperate. As planned, the whales eagerly crossed under the ice from a man-made breathing hole a quarter mile to a broad escape channel forged by a Soviet icebreaker. The whales at first darted for open ocean about 3 miles away, but then they retreated partway and appeared to settle in for the night. Rescuers backed off and hoped for the best.
I think the job's done now. I think we're going to wake up in the morning and those whales are going to be done.
If all else fails, scientists are standing by with recordings of whale sounds to entice the two strays seaward toward the migration south that left without them 2 months ago. David Dow, CBS News, Barrow, Alaska.
This is Jan Charlton in Moscow. News that the trapped whales have finally been freed is slowly filtering out to the people of the Soviet Union. TASS has now announced that the rescue was successful due to Soviet and American efforts and has quoted President Reagan's words of thanks. So the news is out now on radio, maybe too late to make the evening papers, and will no doubt reach most people tonight on the national television news broadcast. It's a story that stirred up a lot of popular support here. People calling Soviet television and radio in Moscow to ask for information. What can you tell us? People asked. How are the whales? Once the Soviet ships got involved, the average person heard a lot about the mammals. Soviet television even broadcast pictures of the trapped whales, the treacherous ice, and the Soviet vessel's valiant attempt to save them. Jan Charlton, CBS News, Moscow.
As he headed for a campaign swing to Arkansas, Missouri, and California, President Reagan confirmed he will recommend to Congress tearing down the nearly complete U.S. Embassy in Moscow, believed riddled with listening devices.
Because there's no way to rid it of the many listening devices that have been built into it. We have to do it. We have no choice.
The job is expected to take 5 years and cost $300 million. The Kremlin has refused to confirm yesterday's word from West German Chancellor Helmut Kohl that all Soviet political prisoners will be released by year's end. It's unclear how many would be involved. We could hear more from a two-day meeting of the Soviet parliament for what is ostensibly a budget session. Barry Peterson reports.
It is Mikhail Gorbachev's debut as the new president of the Supreme Soviet, and the two-day session he opened this morning will no doubt be unlike any session the Stalin parliament has had before. The meeting is to discuss the 1989 budget, and considering Gorbachev's drive for openness, there may be frank public discussion of some of the economic skeletons long hidden in the Soviet closet. There has already been an admission that there is a huge budget deficit, maybe as big as the Americans. Gorbachev has committed himself to improving consumer goods. Next year, investment in heavy industry will be sharply cut back, the money saved spent to stock store shelves. That's a move crucial to Gorbachev's drive to make perestroika work. Unless he can show his people some improvement in their lives, and soon, his reform efforts may bog down in a quagmire of distrust and discontent. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Moscow.
Americans may not vote in very impressive numbers, but oh, how they are polled, especially in the horse race atmosphere of a presidential year. And the poll results themselves have an impact on the candidates and the public at large. The latest ABC News Washington Post poll gives Republican George Bush an 8-point edge over Democrat Michael Dukakis, short of the double-digit advantage other surveys gave Bush earlier this week. While Bush has been warning supporters against overconfidence, he spent much of yesterday in South Dakota and Montana, whose combined total of 7 electoral votes are considered safely in his column. As Eric Engberg reports, the vice president is trying to protect his lead.
There appears to be a conscious plan to limit the chances of any new troublesome issues popping up to surprise Bush in the final innings of the campaign. Smaller states where the Republicans hold safe political bastions provide a nice friendly cocoon. Bush suggested at a rally in Billings, Montana, without citing specific evidence, that Dukakis as president would try to revoke tax cuts that have been approved by a series of Democratic-controlled Congresses.
Don't elect him, and because he might just take that tax cut away from the American people, and I will not do that.
Bush then headed west to the state of Washington, where he'll be making appearances in the Tacoma area today, before heading on to the big electoral vote prize, California, where recent polls have shown Bush with a solid lead. Eric Engberg, CBS News, Billings, Montana.
This is Rob Armstrong with the Dukakis campaign. Michael Dukakis is running uphill just as hard as he can. Dukakis has launched a new series of TV ads aimed at countering the notion that a vote for him is a vote against peace and prosperity. The theme of the commercials is "The Best America Is Yet to Come," a theme that Dukakis alluded to last night at a town meeting in the Chicago suburb of Naperville.
I want this country to begin exporting its products again, not its jobs, and I think we can do that. But it's going to take some real leadership from Washington and a president who understands how you bring people together, and I hope with your help that I can be that president.
Today, Dukakis is stumping here in Illinois, and then he travels to Kansas City for an interview with Dan Rather, part of the campaign's plan to show Dukakis as willing to face hard questions while George Bush is declining to be interviewed. Rob Armstrong, CBS News, with the Dukakis campaign in Chicago.
The sound of an election night party in South Africa. Members of P.W. Botha's National Party celebrating victories in municipal elections. Most blacks had boycotted those elections, and as we hear from correspondent Martha Teichner in Johannesburg, it is not at all clear who was victorious yesterday.
The government is averaging black election results to obscure ward turnout figures as low as 2.5% in highly politicized areas like Soweto, where boycott calls succeeded. The government claims the average black turnout nationally was in the 30 to 40% range. Black radicals say that low turnout figures are a conscious rejection of the government's attempt to involve blacks in the political structures imposed on them. Right-wing white radicals, meanwhile, claim the inroads they've made in South Africa's cities will mean that segregated white areas will stay white. But overall, the South African government managed to hold its own against what appeared to be crippling threats from blacks as well as whites. Martha Teichner, CBS News, Johannesburg.
Los Angeles sheriff's deputies have disclosed an alleged 1983 murder plot by Hustler magazine publisher Larry Flint. Homicide Captain Robert Grimm says the self-proclaimed king of sleaze offered to pay $1 million to Soldier of Fortune Mitchell Werbel to arrange the killings of singer Frank Sinatra and three famous publishers, Playboy's Hugh Hefner, Bob Guccione of Penthouse, and Walter Annenberg, a friend of President Reagan. Flint, who has not yet been charged, has refused comment. The government reports personal income up by 0.5% in September, even after taxes, but people curbed their spending, which was unchanged from August. The dollar's mixed overseas. London gold is up a dime, and on Wall Street, the Dow is down 10.5. 10 past 7.